tetzaveh centers about the various garments of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol and of the Kohen Hedyot, of the regular, the serving priest. And also the Torah specifies in great detail the make of the garments, the materials of the garments. It takes a lot of reading, but especially Hirsch goes into it in extremely lengthy detail.
The sanctuary of God. This should serve as the inspiration for the multifold activities of the nation to consecrate every aspect of Israel's life. That's what the temple was. The temple was the teacher, the inspiration. So here it says, with this concept of what a Mishkan is, that the purpose of the Mishkan is that the Spirit of God should come to dwell and to rest in the souls of everybody in the camp. We have to, therefore, he says, with this idea in mind, we have to analyze the type of the materials that were used for the Mishkan. Why these materials? They had some important meaning, and see how that helps become the teacher, we'll say, of morality and of human values and service of God for the entire nation. That we're supposed to get our inspiration from this Mishkan.
It's very difficult to really understand it, conceptualize what it looked like, and was there any reason why they put in certain materials. You know, when you build a house, the engineers and the architects are very specific. There's a purpose why this is here and why that is there, and you look at materials, and we'll walk into a house, and being a layman and not well versed in the building trade, you won't realize why this material was used. It was either used, but it was a purpose. Perhaps the purpose was to save money for the builder, but at least it's a purpose. Now, when we were told to build the sanctuary, and we were given all of the details, and specifically the different types of materials to be used. The first 13 items are mentioned that have to be used for the sanctuary. And in sentence 3, it says, this is the truma, zohav, v'chesef, and nechoshes, gold and silver and copper, different types of wool. Tcheles is the sky blue color. Argomon and talashoni are two forms of red wool. Red wool, one is the purple, we'll say, and the other one is like a scarlet wool. Talashoni would be like a scarlet. And sheish is linen, and izim are goat's hairs. Now, we've listed 3, 4, 5, 6, a number of the wool and the linen and the metals. And let's concentrate a little bit of this to follow this through and to see what the significance of this is for the construction. We also mentioned last week that the concept of Mikdash and Mishkan, what the concept is, that it's not just building a sanctuary for God and keeping God in the sanctuary, but God's presence in the sanctuary or amongst you is dependent upon the way that you keep the Kedusha, the spiritual aspect of your life and of your entire nation. And then God will dwell here. So if that's the case, really what the sanctuary is a model. It's like a model from which you are able to understand what Kedusha is, and that this Kedusha should teach you and manifest itself in our life. So now, let's take a look at the metals. What is the significance of metals? Well, actually, metals, there are three aspects to a metal. We find many times that a metal is used as a metaphor if you're dealing with firmness and strength. So you always say that something is strong like this metal. And gold, silver, copper, so strength, stability, and indestructibility, normally you use that with copper, with iron. We find in Yirmiyahu, he says, they're a pillar of iron and walls of copper, meaning that it's very strong. Or in Eiv, it says, is my strength the strength of rocks, or is my flesh of copper, nechoshes? In the Torah itself, it says, the heavens and the earth will be likened to copper and iron, meaning that it won't give any rain, it won't give any fruit. So we see that one of the aspects of copper and iron are strength and invincibility. We also find another aspect of metals. They're used regarding to the value. Gold and silver are considered the most precious of the possessions which man tries to find. Therefore, in Isaiah, when he speaks of the betterment for the people, it says, from copper I will bring gold, and from iron I will bring silver. So, speaking about the various values and how God will treat us in giving us these precious gifts. So these are two aspects, the invincibility and the values. But he says the most frequent use of metals as metaphors are more related to the property of the metal. That means when you have the more precious the metal is, it's in a pure, unalloyed state. And a lot of times it has non-precious ores and residues which are mixed in. Now, but you could always refine a metal, meaning that even if it's in its impure state, you could refine it. So you have a whole cycle. The intermediate degrees of purity can be determined by various tests and various experiments. But even in the poorest mixture, there is still some precious metals which do not become lost. For example, copper takes the nature of a person. It's a nature that is yet not refined. Silver describes the stage of still requiring further purification, but at least it's able to be refined. Gold is pure and unmixed, and also resists the strongest tests, so that's the purest, most sterling moral nobility of the metals. Quoting from Hirsch, he says, copper would represent the nature which is still ignoble. Silver would be the one who is ready to be ennobled by purification. And gold is the original and test resisting the most complete purity and goodness. Now, we find many allusions to that in Tanakh. Some of the famous ones, Eschayet says the following, that two-thirds of the people of Israel will perish. And I will bring the third part through the fire and will refine them as silver is refined and will test them as gold is tested. Or in Malachi, it says that the message of the covenant is like a refiner's fire and like a launderer's cleanser. So we see here that the idea of gold and silver depends on the purity and the quality of the person. And we'll see how that fits in to the construction of the temple. The next point, which is mentioned, about the idea of the wool and the linen. What is the difference? I mentioned that you use three types of wool, t'cheles, argamon, t'lach, shoni. And then you have the sheish, which is flax. And these two aspects are further specialized by their colors. The linen is white. T'cheles, we said, is blue. And the two shades of red. Sheish, which is linen flax, is representative of the vegetative. And white is purity. What does this mean? Every person has within him the vegetative aspect and also the animal aspect. Now, moral purity, when the Torah speaks of purity, it speaks of purity in the powers of our vegetative life. What is our vegetative life? Basically, it deals with the reproduction and also the nourishment. Because just like a vegetable, right, has these two aspects to it. It has the reproduction and the nourishment. And when the Torah speaks of moral purity, it means in those two points. Now, white is the idea of pure. So now if you have sheish, meaning linen, which is white, means that God demands that the actual character of a man in these aspects should be pure. Wool is representative of the animal aspect, and it's of animal origin. The animal aspect in man, and so too he says that the dyes, the colors mentioned, blue, purple, and scarlet, are all of animal origin. Now, you have a paler type of red and a nobler type of red. So he says if red in general is the color of the blood, which represents life, which is the animal aspect, so Shani is the lower animal stage of life, and Argamon, the color, is the human stage of life. And Techeles is sky blue, the color which seems to point to a realm beyond the human sight, and that represents the godliness which is revealed to us, the color of God's bond with man. So now if we make a garment that has everything in it, Sheish, Shoni, Argomon, and Techeles, so we have the vegetative aspect of man, then we also have the animal aspect of man, we have the human, which is the argomon, and the tcheles, which is the godly. He goes into the idea of shatness. Shatness, you're not allowed to have wool and linen. What is the concept of wool and linen? He says, the law against the intermingling of wool and flax in our clothing is a symbolic admonition not to permit our animal element to surrender to our vegetable stimuli, and not to allow the former to be changed to and interwoven with the latter. Rather, we should let the vegetative element of our bodies uphold the animal element, and our animal element in turn to uphold our human spirit, so that all three together in its striving may be perfected as that which is the bearer of the divine on earth. What is wool? That's the cognition, the will, the striving, and the vegetable aspect is the nourishment, the procreation, and all the stimuli. So when a person has the mixture, we have to see that it shouldn't be mixed. That means that the wool, the animal aspect, should not be mixed together with the other aspect, but it should, the other aspect should serve, we'll say, the human aspect, and both of them should strive to achieve the higher aspect of spirituality. And therefore, by separating the linen from the wool, we are able to draw man's cognizance and awareness of this. But a person who looks at life from a different perspective, the wool serves the animal and the flax serves the wool, because you eat to live and you live to eat. But if your whole purpose is only in that material sense, so your wool is nurturing your flax and your flax is nurturing your wool. But the Torah says it has to be separate. You first have to realize there is indeed the flax of man, which should be separate from the wool, and underneath the wool should govern the flax, but the wool itself has three different colors, and the highest color of the wool is the techeles. And therefore he says, the tzalas shoni and the argomon are two types of wool dyed with red matter, but there's a difference from what type of red it is. One type of red, he says, shoni, is the animal in the red. The animal in the red, for example, we know that red is a color of guilt. In Isaiah, it speaks of your hands are full of blood. And he says, wash yourselves, make yourself clean. So the color of blood signifies crime in that aspect. However, we find also that color of a different shade of red is the color of finery. Man is called red, the red one who is par excellence. That's a higher level of red. So the order of ascension is Sheish, then you get to Shoni, the animal, then you get to Argomon, which is the human aspect of the man, and then you get to Techeles, which is the divine aspect of man. So now the temple, as we'll see, the sanctuary, the walls of the sanctuary were made from these various materials, because this was the purpose of the construction of the sanctuary. So if we look at chapter 26, sentence 1, it speaks about the Mishkan itself. V'es ha-Mishkan, the tabernacle. Now what is the tabernacle? The tabernacle was made out of curtains. So it says you should make the tabernacle out of 10 curtains. Now the curtains were made of, look, sheish linen, mosh zor, twisted. Utcheles ve'argomon ve'tolas shoni. It was made out of 6-ply twisted fine linen, which was sky blue, and then argomon, purple, that's the higher type of red. Tolas shoni is the animal type of red, and it was made together with sheish. Sheish was the vegetative. And then we had, after the vegetative, we had the second type of red, which would be the animal, then the human type of red. And then we also had the tcheles. Masei choshev ta'aseh osom. You're supposed to make them also into keruvim. Now the keruvim, what are the forms of the keruvim? We find the keruvim twice in the temple. We find the keruvim on the tapestry. We also find the Kruvim into the Holy Ark. We're speaking about the tapestries in the sanctuary of God. Now, let me read you how they did this. It says, Kruvim ma'aseh choshev ta'aseh osom. Woven into Kruvim, you have to make this. It's a weaving that the whole texture of fabric consisted of figures which were completely visible on both sides. They did not consist of material on which the Kruvim were embroidered, but the curtains consisted of Kruvim woven together. They were Kruvim curtains. The idea was, the word rekem, he says, shows the figures to be thrown. When you use the word rugam, that means it would mean that the figures were put on the material. But choshev is the idea of combining and joining, so that they were complete figures which were joined together by weaving. The choshev, the person who wove it, wove figures, complete figures, right through the material. It would be clear on both sides, and he joined them together. All right, now he says this is a special kind of a gift, but that's what it was, that the material itself, it wasn't just like you had a basic material and you wove something onto the material, and you sewed it onto the material. But the material itself was a result of the weaving. Now, that's what the walls were made of. We'll come back to the significance of that in a moment. Now, if you notice in Perek Chavav, in sentence 31, it says there that the Osisa Parochas. Now, what did we have? We had the walls in the courtyard. This is the inner courtyard. This picture a courtyard, which had around it, around the courtyard, there were also, we'll see later, walls made of different type of materials. Then you had sanctuary. Sanctuary itself, you had a menorah, and then you also had, besides the menorah, you also had the shulchan, the table with the showbread. Then there was a parochas hanging, and in back of the parochas, that was the Holy of Holies. Now, up to now, I was speaking about the materials and the tapestries woven with the Kruvim. That was of the sanctuary, not the outer courtyard. That was the sanctuary itself. Now, the parochas was the separation between the sanctuary and the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Holy of Holies, where the Ark was in there with the other Kruvim. So it says here that in 31, that this parochas should be made, again, of Tcheles, Argomon, Tolas Shoni. These are the same items, the Shesh Mazor, six plied linen, and the three different types of wool. And they should also be made by weaving together with the Kruvim. So the sanctuary, the separation between the outer sanctuary and the Holy of Holies, had the same kind of material, the same weaving, as the outer walls of this sanctuary that we mentioned. We'll go to sentence 36. Sentence 36 is speaking about an entrance to the Pesach Oel Moed. So it says here you should make a protecting curtain. Here's another curtain. This is similar to the Pareches. This is also a curtain. This is the curtain as you go from the courtyard, from within the courtyard into the sanctuary. Sanctuary again has in it the menorah and the shulchan. We had just spoken about a curtain going a little bit further into the Holy of Holies, but you didn't have wooden doors, you had curtains. So now we're speaking about the curtain going from the courtyard into the sanctuary. So it says in sentence 36, this covering, this protecting curtain should be made out of Tcheles, Argomon, Talas, Shoni, Vishesh, Mazor. The same idea, if you notice, but Masse Rokain, it should be made from embroidery work. It should not be made in the same way that the others were made. The others were made Masse Choshev, meaning it had to be, you had to be extremely capable and artistic in that, and to weave the entire wool should be made from, just like you have a different color of wool, you have the wool is actually made, the material is actually made from the Kruvim. So whenever you look at it, inside or outside, you see Kruvim. That's extremely difficult. Here they use the same material, but if you notice, this wasn't as holy because it was a separation from the outer court to the sanctuary. the same materials, but there were no kruvim, and it was a work of embroidery rather than this work of choshev. So what was the significance for this? There must have been a significance for this aspect, which we'll shortly see. Now, in addition to that, let's take a look at chapter 27, sentence 9, speaks about the outer tapestries, which says the court of the tabernacle. Now, how should you make the materials? Shesh moshzor. It should be hangings of linen. Oh, all of a sudden we see no more. This is the outer yard, but not with the wool at all, but just plain linen. And then it continues, what is the base for these? So in sentence 16 it says, well, sharachot's there. How about the gate of going into the courtyard? So it says here, the gate of going into the courtyard, the hanging there, was made of tcheles, again, atamon, masei rokein. All right? It was made from all of these different types, but it was made from what? Not from the kruvim, but it was made masei rokein. So we have now, how many curtains, different curtains do we have? Let's just review that. We have one type of a curtain, which is the shar hechatzer. I have to enter into the courtyard, to go into the outer courtyard, I have one curtain. I keep on going the outer courtyard to go into the sanctuary, I have another curtain. Within the sanctuary, I go to the Holy of Holies, I have a third curtain. I also have a set of walls around the outer courtyard, curtains, all of this is curtains. I also have a set of curtains around the sanctuary. So I have like three hanging doors and two whole sets of curtains. Each instance we see and will repeat, they're made of different materials. Most of the curtains, with the exception of one, are made from tcheles, argomon, talas shoni, and sheish, everything. The only one that doesn't have that is the outer curtains of the courtyard. That's plain linen, like vegetative. You could formulate in your mind what it means already. The sanctuary, the curtain going into the inner sanctuary, right, and the curtain and the inner curtain surrounding the sanctuary and the cover separating between the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they happen to have kruvim on it. They were made masei choshev. Whereas the one going into the sanctuary, the hanging, and the other one were not masei choshev. Now, is there some importance to this? Now, if you just read the psukim, would actually listen attentively, why is this made this way? Why is that? I mean, there must be really some reason why these were chosen to be made in that fashion. It's not just that it was that way. So, using the basic ideas that we presented, we'll be able to see, perhaps, why they chose these forces, why this should be that way. The Mishkan. Now let's just picture for a moment the Mishkan. What do we have in the Mishkan? We have standing before the entrance in the east. Can you picture where we're standing? We're standing in the east. Now it's not where the Kesel Maravi. When you stand on the western wall, you're standing behind the wall. But if you would be standing on the other side of Jerusalem, what they call East Jerusalem, you would be in back, you know, where that the other side in the Arab part. You'd be standing in the east facing the west. Envision that. Not the way the Arabs built. They built their temple up there from the south and the north, but we're talking east and west. And the Kodesh HaKadoshim is west, which would be on the side nearer to the Kosel Maravi. Say you would go on the other side, you know, go over the Arab side of East Jerusalem, and you're facing west. What would you see? So standing in front of the entrance in the east, we would see the western background. If we had, you know, if there were no curtains, the Holy of Holies, and we'd see the Ark there in front of it, right? That would be the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then we would go out into the, in front of that we'd see the Holy, the Mikdash itself, the Mishkan itself. There we would have the table, the Shulchan with the Lechem HaPonim, which would be on the north side. We would have the menorah, correct? The menorah would also be on the other side. And in the middle, a little bit back, and behind the curtain in the ark, that would be the Holy Ark, which has its influence on both of the others. We'll see, that's like center. So now they're covered and surrounded by white, double red, and blue Kruvim tapestries, which in the north and the west and in the south side, they flow down out of sight behind the walls. They're going to be walls. Obviously, the tapestries have to lay in something, so they flow over the wall. If you wanted, you could pass around this. This would be without the tapestries. This is what we just mentioned, what we would be seeing. If you want to pass that around, you'd get a look and just get an idea if that's what you envision. Now, the idea here is the curtains, or this, the national light, has its roots in purity, in vegetative, meaning the idea of the vegetative in man, which is the reproduction and the nourishment. So it could only, we're speaking, what brings a Mishkan. That is the essence, and it continues going upwards in purity, and it combines all the progress and development and goes in the various types, we say, of the wool and with the tchelis. And this constitutes the inner sanctuary and the Pesach going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that tapestry, because that is the whole purpose, because in this way it will be able to bring down the Shekhinah. Now, what is the Shekhinah? He says the Kruvim represent the presence of God in the human world, and they present the same materials that we've mentioned, and if you have that, you will be able to be this a source for the resting of God, because basically that's what the Kruvim are. What are the Kruvim? The Ramban, Nachmanides, explains the idea of the Kruvim, that the Kruvim represent like the fire, where it says where God dwelled in Har Sinai and he spoke to you between the fire. The Kruvim represent like the fire, and the word of God comes to you between the fire. So in order to be able, these Kruvim, to be woven out of the linen threads of the pure vegetable element, the crimson woolen threads of the animal element, the pure purple woolen threads of the human element, and the sky blue woolen threads of the godly element of the human being. It is only the element that's specially characterized, now we say by the priestly garments, the high priestly garments, we have the same idea. In this week's Sedra, if you'll notice, you'll follow Shabbos, you'll see that the materials are the same kind of the materials. And he says the element that specially characterizes the high priestly garments that represent the threads of gold, that is lacking in the representation of the Kruvim. Meaning, for that, the one factor which is not presented by the Kruvim, it is the one factor that man and man alone has to bring to the structure of godliness on earth. He says the Kruvim are omitted in the Big Day Kahuna, the Kruvim which represents the presence of God in these materials. So that is used for the presentation of the human perfection of the high priest, meaning that the garments of the high priest, the one thing lacking is the Kruvim. What does that mean? Because it means that that man has to do. There is no way that Yerushalayim is something that you, that God could give you. So in the presence of the high priest wearing these garments, the aspect of the Kruvim, thank you, is really missing for that purpose, to teach you that it's not something that man himself can bring about. Let me just sum this up. Now let us picture the courtyard. It's formed by white curtains. So now we know the inner sanctuary, where you have the various things with the Kruvim, meaning that man's perfection, by perfecting these elements, will bring the sojourning of God in the Mikdash. But now when you go to the outer courtyard, that was just formed by white curtains made of linen, right? Which was made of 6-ply twisted thread. Now, how were these curtains hung? The curtains here were hung from pillars, which stood on copper sockets. There were pillars, walls, like bases, you know, standing in copper sockets, encircled by silver and held by silver hooks. The environment announces to us, we are standing in the forecourt of purification. The main impression we receive is of whiteness. That's what we see, white linen. This conveys to us the idea of purity, of tahara. And tahara in the first place in the sphere of the vegetable side of human nature, the sphere of eating and drinking and bodily pleasures. This is the first stage to be aimed at. Its nature is purely negative, keeping away from anything unholy, from everything which defiles human nature for its holy calling. It is the preliminary stipulation for all positive progress. Now, before I go into the sanctuary, when I'm still outside of the white courtyard, I've made one move. I've made the first move walking up to the outer yard. But how do I get into the outer yard? The outer yard would say symbolic like Yom Kippur. At least we wear white and we refrain from bodily pleasures. So in a sense, we're seeking to purify our vegetative aspect. And we hope to go into the altar and work our way in to the highest degree where the Kruvim will say rest together with everything else, where the divine rests upon us. But the first thing that hits us, the first step that we have to make is to see the purity of the vegetative nature. And that is a negative thing in a sense, self-control. The great mission of self-control to which the Chotzer calls us is nothing superhuman, is nothing that calls for some sublime elevation that is beyond the normal power of human nature. It is the creator of that nature who calls to us, and he demands nothing that he hasn't given us the gifts and the ability to accomplish. Now, it's not easy. Obviously, we know it's not easy. It is not easy, but it's not impossible for man to be able to accomplish. We recognize the idea of tshuva and so on, of course, because it's not easy. If it would have been easy, there wouldn't be any tshuva. You don't do it, that's it. The answer is it's not easy. So there is the need for repentance. But it's not that it's impossible. Theoretically, we believe that it's possible, you know, to achieve the highest level. But the first level is a purification of this part of man's nature by staying away and abstaining from that and sanctifying the vegetative part of his body. I mean, if somebody gets past that, we already consider him a tzaddik, obviously. But this is the first level, and it's possible. Man has the ability to do it. Now he goes further. The chotzer, the pillars of the chotzer, stand on copper feet. Copper is the ignoble. Remember we said earlier. But they have silver encirclements and silver hooks. So the idea is this is the first step. From copper to silver. And in the linens, it's white. Now, when we go into the sanctuary, the walls of the sanctuary, they stand in silver feet, but they're overlaid with gold. So from copper to silver, and then from silver to gold, that's the progress that the ignoble character makes through purification in the metallurgical to immutable pure gold. That up to which the forecourt struggles forms the basis on which the sanctuary stands. The forecourt is the copper and the silver. The sanctuary starts with the silver to the gold. So after you've gone through the forecourt, then you go further to the sanctuary. By this allocation of the metals, then we see the step-by-step progressive nature of the teaching of the edifice. If you follow the metals, you'll see the progressive nature in the same way with the tapestries. Now, if you remember, we had the Mosach Pesach Oel, the curtain at the entrance of the sanctuary. That was the second curtain. And then we have the outer curtain, the Mosach Shar HaChatzer, the curtain going into the forecourt. He says both had the same materials as the tapestry. Remember the curtain around the walls of the Mishkan. So the curtain going was, everything was made of these four different types of materials except the white outer wall. But the other three curtains the Parechas and the two curtains, plus the other curtains surrounding the sanctuary, all were made out of four materials. But the idea was these curtains, not the Parechas, that's near the Holy of Holies, they obviously had Keruvim. But these other two curtains did not have Keruvim. They did not consist of woven Keruvim, remember we said. From our text, we must assume that they were quite without any figures. All right? and they're described as embroidery fancy work. So this was made, you have to say that the linen was woven for a background. If it was embroidered and it wasn't proving material, so the linen would have been probably the background, and the threads of blue, purple, and scarlet was needlework on the linen background. So the curtain at the entrance to the courtyard was hung on pillars similar to those of the surrounding of the court. But the curtain at the entrance to the sanctuary was hung on pillars which, although in all respects were similar to the other pillars round the walls of the Mishkan and were of shittim wood, but they had feet of copper. So the curtain at the entrance of the sanctuary had everything in common with the curtain surrounding the sanctuary, except, of course, for the Kruvim, right? Except for the Kruvim, and it had feet of copper. That was the difference. Been a little bit maybe not too clear because I have to cull out the sentences from lengthy dissertations. There were two sets of walls. The walls of the outer yard, which is made of white, only white. Then the walls of the sanctuary, which we actually, the walls of the sanctuary are called the Mishkan. That's really called the Mishkan. Because what is the Mishkan? These were the walls. And again, let me describe what that was made from. The Mishkan, the walls of the sanctuary, was made of Urios 10, Sheish Mazor, meaning linen, Sheish Mazor, 6 ply, Treles Argormon, Tola Shoni, Kruvim Maasei Choshev Taase Osom. They were made of Kruvim Maasei Choshev. What? What is Kruvim Maasei Choshev? From the Kruvim made by this difficult artistic method. We have the Kruvim type of tapestries were made for the sanctuary walls plus the Pareches. The outer wall, the entrance into the sanctuary from the Igart was made the same way, but without Kruvim. All right, the outer walls were made from the white linen. The outer walls were made from the white linen. The other difference was that the two curtains, the curtain at the entrance to the courtyard was hung in the same kind of pillars and everything else, but the curtain at the entrance to the Mishkan was hung in the pillars surrounding the Mishkan with one exception. It had copper feet. That was the difference. So the difference was in the fact that it had copper feet. Now, he says, we have remarked above that the materials of the Kruvim tapestry were the same which the garments of the high priest represent the elements of perfection in human character. If these materials appear here in these door and gate curtains without the pattern of Kruvim woven into them, it represents, we said, the elements of perfection, which is true. But there are no Kruvim there, like we mentioned by the high priest. So if these materials appear at the door and the gate curtains without the pattern of Kruvim woven into them, they cannot be meant to bring to our notice Kruvim announcing the presence of God as the tapestries are, but only the fundamental elements of the human character which are to be brought to perfection. Right? The outer points remind us that we have to bring to perfection. So he continues, I'm summing this up, if what we have taken to be the meaning of Maasei Rekem is correct, then the two reds and the blue woolen threads stitched onto the white linen background, again, would represent the godly in conjunction with the animal and human activities of actual life, lived on the foundation of vegetative purity. But we said the same in the high priest, but the Kruvim are not there, meaning you got to put that in. This is a wall, so you don't, but there, but when we come to consider the prescribed priestly garments, we shall find that the ordinary priests wore the color of the forecourt, which was the white, pure white. The ordinary priest wears pure white. The high priest colors of the Mishkan, thereby relegating the former, the regular priest, to representing the preliminary negative stage of purity, and the latter, the high priest, to the positive achievement of raising every phase of human life, vegetative, animal, human, and divine, into the realm of spirituality. Now, even as the white-clad Kohen Hediot wore all white, but in his girdle that he put around his white garments, he had the positive colors of the Mishkan. That means that was made out of this type of wool, and thereby appeared as girded for the positive holy perfection of man. He still hasn't reached it, but like girded, trying to reach it, showing thereby this positive holiness as the goal to be aimed at. In the same way, the white forecourt had the curtain, in the same way, the positive colors of the sanctuary. Just like the regular priest, the Kohen Hediot, had the white garments, but it had the girded, seeing all of this beginning with the vegetative is leaning towards this type of perfection. So the same thing, the outer one, true, was white shani. Yet the outer entrance was made of the four wools. That would be like the girdle that the common priest wore. It is therefore held up to the eyes of all who entered there apart from the very start as the real object and goal. That means the positive holy, that's the object why you're entering in here. The holy perfection of life by carrying out the purposes of God with the table and the lamp, with all material and spiritual possessions and powers as the sanctuary teaches. In there he also gives you the idea of what the table and what the lamp teaches you. But we could appreciate that. These are all positive aspects in man's cognizance and so on. And he goes further, but first, before he could go into the positive aspect, he has to go away from the vegetative part. He has to find moral perfection in the Sur Mirah by abstaining. And then he could go further. That's what this entrance teaches him, just like the priest had. Now, the garments of the common priest were worn like they covered the vegetative part of his body, the Michnasayim, like from his knees up to his thighs, past his loins, which in a sense covers the nutritional and reproductive parts of the body. And that was like clothed in white to teach us that that's the first step of the common man. But the girdle was around there with the sheish mosor. So this is just one of the themes inherent, I mean, in this. It covered the tapestries and basically the metal part.
In chapter 25, it says, Daber el b'nei Yisroel, speak unto the children of Israel. Now this is when God was first giving Moshe the commandment. Yet, if you'll take a look later, when it comes to building the sanctuary, it reads the following. Aaron and all the Nasiim came, and Moshe spoke to them. And afterwards, Kol b'nei Yisroel came over, and Moshe commanded them to do whatever God had told them. Now it says there, all the children of the Bnei Yisrael. Now in chapter 35, sentence 34, there it reads a little bit different. In 35:34 it reads there, Moshe said, El Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael. There he uses the difference from Bnei Yisrael to Adas Bnei Yisrael. So the Sephorna says that the phrases, the children of Israel and the congregation of the children of Israel, are meant to differentiate between the people and their leaders. Children of Israel was informing them that he's going to ask the officers, that officers, he's going to ask the heads of the people to appoint officers to come and take money from them. That's Kol B'nei Yisrael. Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael means like the Sanhedrin, that they were supposed to appoint the officers. But it turned out that the people were so anxious to make this sanctuary, they didn't wait. It says that the Bnei Yisrael themselves, before the officers were even appointed, God was telling them, don't force them. When you have officers, just ask. They didn't even have to have officers. They started bringing all these gifts, and there wasn't enough. They didn't need the gifts. They begged them to stop bringing the gifts. The funds were full, overflowing. So much so that the elders, who figured we'll appoint officers, and then we're going to take care of whatever's missing. They were the wealthy leaders. There was nothing for them actually to give. So this is emphasized, according to the Sephorna, by the change. First it says, El Bnei Yisrael, Daber El Bnei Yisrael, but then later in 34:4 it says El Adas Bnei Yisrael, meaning Moshe was calling them, go ahead and appoint officers. But they had no reason to appoint officers because donated in such a fashion, so free. Now, what did they have? They have 13 items that are listing here. This is the truma, it says, that you should take from them. Zahav, kesef, nechoshes. Gold, silver, copper. Then, treles, argomon, klashoni, sheish, izim. Sky wool, purple, scarlet wool, three types of wool, linen, correct, and goat's hair. Ram's skins dyed red, and also skin of the tachash, which was a certain creature, and atze shittim and the shittim wood. And also oil for light, spices for anointing oil and for the spicy incense, and then shohem stones and stones for setting for the ephod and the breast pocket. Now, they were only allowed to go ahead and collect these 13 items. That means if people wanted to give something else, they didn't accept it because they only took the specific items that were necessary for the construction of the tabernacle. Then it says, the purpose of this is utterly mikdash, to make for me a mikdash, that I dwell in their midst. So on this point, Hirsch says that if you just glance, we'll say, in certain chapters in the Torah, we see that the mikdash and mishkan had two different ideas. The idea was, by building a mishkan, each one of us would then be able to come in our own life and make a mikdash. The idea of making a mishkan didn't mean that we have a temple, God's going to be in that temple, and that's all that's involved. God didn't concentrate only in the temple. The idea was that God was, and our whole life had to be sanctified. He says it only requires a glance at chapter 26 in Leviticus, which concludes the laws regarding the consecrating of the temple and of our lives, in the end of Vayikra, which come after the instructions for the building of the temple. And there it says clearly, Im bechukesai telechu, if you will go on my statutes. And it ends up, Vinosati mishkoni besoichachem, I will put my mishkan amongst you. Now, what does that mean? The Beseichachem of our verse stands far beyond the presence of God in the temple itself. But it means that the proximity of God in our midst, showing itself in the whole happiness and prosperity of our private and national life. So it's clearly enunciated there that the idea of God dwelling in our midst does not symbolize, and here's the concentration in the altar, but that should draw our attention to the fact that God dwells in our midst and therefore should it permeate and pervade every facet of our life. But if we do not keep the Torah and so on, so then it says, I will not dwell in your midst. And it's interesting how the Chazal explained that when the Shekhinah departed, it departed in stages, depending upon the sanctity of the land and Yerushalayim and so on, and then finally, like, it went into the Holy of Holies, and finally it went up from the Holy of Holies. The idea was that the Shekhinah permeated and it pervaded all over. But if we no longer abided by the Chukei Sai, then it left our midst. So our midst here does not mean, like we say that, this is the place of the Shekhinah. The next door I could do whatever I want. Like in certain temples used to be that upstairs is a sanctuary, right? So there in shul you gotta abide by everything. But downstairs in the social hall, you can do whatever you want because that's not where the Shekhinah is. But obviously we see how ludicrous it is because it wasn't meant that the Shekhinah should be in only a certain place. And Hirsch says this point is emphasized in Vayikra, where it says there, Im bechukesai telechu, if you will go with my statutes, and then v'nasati mishkoni b'seichachem, I will go ahead and I will put my my Mishkan amongst you. We also find, it says, for example, in Bamidbar, do not defile the land in which you dwell, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, God, dwell in the midst of the children of Israel. So it doesn't mean necessarily in one place. And for example, it says, when you go out in Deuteronomy, there are many places which he quotes. It says, when you go out, this is v'shalchanti b'seichachom, dwelling in your midst. When you go forth in your camp against your enemies in Dvorim, it says, you should guard yourself from every evil word, for God walks in the midst of your camp to save you and to defeat your enemies before you. Your camp shall be holy, that no nakedness should be seen on you, and he will withdraw from you. So it's very clear that when God says, I will dwell in your midst,
the Shekhinah is every place. A person should envision it. He doesn't have to have one place to look. But what was the idea of the golden calf? One of the problems was they had to have some kind of person is only human, and they had to have some sanctuary or something that they can relate to. So that's why their original intent was to make this calf, and this would be a place where they could concentrate forward to it. So this was something that they saw was lacking, that the people were not in the Madrega, were not at that level where they didn't have to have, we'll say, a makom to gather together where the Shekhinah would be there, that they could appreciate the godliness. So because every person supposedly should be a sanctuary of God. But as a result of the Egel Hazov, the Mishkan was told to Moshe that they have to make a Mishkan. They also re-Migdash. They should make to me a Migdash, the Shachanti B'Solchon, and I will dwell in their midst. Meaning what? In each individual will be a Migdash, because that was really the original purpose, but they couldn't really connect to that spiritual idea because they were lacking a visible sign. So therefore, you have Yosuli Migdash. If they will make this Migdash, this is a new idea to have Yosuli Migdash in place of after the Egel, then Vishachanti Vesechom, then I'll be able to dwell really in their midst, because that's the way they will be able to relate to Hashem.